Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. And please visit the site and note the articles that are posted each day. There will be a goodly number of them posted later today. There were very important ones posted yesterday, including on the so-called swine flu epidemic. It really comes down to a major scam. There's important information on the site to read. And Global Research stays operating because of reader support, and we hope that you will support if you're able. Global Research takes no funding from corporate or other organizations related to the interests that we pretty much take the task in the articles that appear on the site. I can't imagine any of these or anyone associated with them would support Global Research. So it's strictly up to readers who want this kind of information to support the site, keep it viable, and keep it producing more and more material exactly like this. Regular readers know exactly what we're talking about. The site is an award-winning site. It was voted last year the best internet, the best site on an international level. Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that it is. So stay with it, follow the material, and support it as you're able. Today we return to the subject of occupied Palestine, and specifically Gaza under siege. And I have two guests. One is Rachel Rudolph. She's a professor of Middle East and Islamic Studies at Emory and Henry College. Her research and her writing focus mainly on resistance strategies, especially Islamic movements in Algeria, in Palestine, and in the Philippines. She's also taught at West Virginia University. Her book, she's writing a new book on the recent war in Gaza, Operation Cast Lead, from December 27th to January 18th, so 22 days, an absolute horror. Regular listeners to this program know that we have discussed it many times, including with Rachel. Rachel, I'm not certain what your newest book is. Let me just read the books that I know about, and then I want to introduce Sammy, too, and hopefully we have him on the line. Your books include Terrorism to Politics, Mobilizing Movements, Mobilizing Contemporary Islamic Resistance, and Saudi Arabia's War on Terrorism. And your new book, do you have a timeline on when it will be out? Rachel, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Well, we're not sure when it will be released. We're looking at fall 2009. As you know, my co-author is Saeed Abdel-Wahid.
Yes. Well, that makes sense because the Operation Cast Lead ended mid or so January, and to write about it, my goodness, it takes a little bit of time to write a book, which you know better than I do, and you want to do it well, and I know you and Saeed will do a magnificent job. I can't wait to have you get it done and get you back on the program so we can talk about it. But let me tell listeners who Sammy is, Sammy Habib. Sammy's been on the program before as well for a brief segment with some others also located in Gaza. We need to take a break, but Sammy is a Gaza-based blogger. He's currently in London, but he blogs from Gaza, and he reports on what's going on a daily basis, what's important. The music means we need to take a break. Let's do that, and we'll come back, and hopefully Sammy is on as well as Rachel. And we'll talk about what's going on there right now. It is not very pleasant. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Rachel Rudolph. And Sammy, I believe we've connected with you. Welcome to the program.
Welcome, sir.
Oh, thank you, Sammy. I introduced you very briefly. Let me just say a few more words. That when your home is Gaza, I had you on the program briefly before during Operation Cast Lead, and you blog daily from Gaza to let people know what really is going on from someone who's right there and living through it on a day-by-day basis. Before we get into discussing Gaza under siege and the latest events that are going on, let me say one more thing about this so-called swine flu epidemic. It's so crucially important because it is scaring the living daylights, certainly out of people in the U.S., with round-the-clock headlines, with absolutely fraudulent accounts of what this is and what's going on. It's terrifying people. It's a form of distraction to get them focusing on an absolutely fraudulent story and not focusing on what matters most, the things that really are affecting their lives. And it's also a scam to sell very, very dangerous vaccines that no one should take. And the main comment, I want to make two main comments. Go to globalresearch.ca and read the top featured article on the site. Went up yesterday, I believe. Bill Engel, Bill's a regular on this program. Bill Engel's article titled Flying Pigs, Tamiflu, and Factory Farms. And you'll know what this thing is all about. But nobody should rush off and let these people scare you into doing something that if you follow their advice, it will potentially threaten your health and your welfare. Absolutely understand this is a scam. The reports about it are fake. When they talk about deaths all over the place, they're liars. They're liars. Get the facts and don't let them scam you. I say that as a health warning. Okay, let's get on the topic of the day, Gaza under siege. Rachel, again, Sammy, I welcome you both. Rachel, I got your email that you sent to me and to some others when you spread the word that Egyptian authorities were preventing a humanitarian shipment, food and medical supplies and whatever is needed to the people of Gaza who have been under siege for the past 2 years. And Sammy certainly knows it because he lives there. And they wanted to send it back. This was coming from Ireland, I believe. And they wanted to send it back. Well, apparently the people of Ireland don't want it back. They want it going where it should go. Rachel, talk about that a little bit.
I don't know much of the details other than the fact that this week the Egyptian authorities have ordered the Irish convoy back to Ireland. It was a couple of days ago they were sent back for additional paperwork, and then they were still rejected.
Of course, additional paperwork is like throwing sand in the gears deliberately. Paperwork, my goodness, you've got people under siege. You've got starvation. You've got people under the most dire conditions, and they worry about paperwork. I mean, they should have been doing airdrops to get stuff in there fast, real fast. My goodness, we did it. I'm old enough to remember the Berlin airlift back during the Cold War in the 1940s. Oh, I forget the year. It might have been 1948 or so, when Berlin was surrounded by territory controlled by the Soviet Union, and they refused to allow ground transportation in. So around the clock airdrop was planned, and it supplied the people of West Berlin, not East Berlin, West Berlin, with all sorts of things they needed. Well, it's amazing what we can do when we want to, and it's pretty outrageous what we don't do when we decide we won't allow something important to happen. Sammy, you live in Gaza. Talk about it from that point of view.
Well, it's really a very sad situation at the moment in the Gaza Strip. The situation is getting worse and worse since the end of this war. We reckon that the ceasefire announced unilaterally by Israel would bring peace and tranquility and aid and help and would open the borders for the Palestinians and allow them in or out. But for Syria, everything turned upside down, and that ceasefire ended to be a siege fire in which the borders are closed, in which people are unable to travel, in which students are stuck and trapped in the Gaza Strip, in which the patients are dying every day in the crossing, in which houses are not built, in which tens of thousands are still homeless, even the Palestinians, and only yesterday on the TV in Gaza started to build their houses out of clay because simply Israel is blockading all the borders and not allowing any kind of reconstruction materials to get in Gaza. Even today, two young people died in the tunnels while digging to bring aid and food from Egypt.
It's really incredible, Sammy, that the tunnels have to, all the borders are closed. All the borders are closed. It's like Gaza is hermetically sealed, including from the sea, because Israel patrols the sea, and they can stop anything, any boat or ship if they want that's approaching, and they can do more than stop it. I mean, they can attack it, they can sink it, they can do anything they want. So people desperately need to dig tunnels to get in supplies like food to eat. My goodness. And to me, the most outrageous part of it all is that the world community is basically supporting this. I mean, by standing by and doing nothing, or in the case of Egypt, Egypt is absolutely allied with Israel, and they're co-conspiratorially guilty of this. They have locked down the border on their side, and they're preventing vital supplies from coming in. I mean, Egypt could get them in very easily. They could open the border, and they could let trucks of food and medicine and so on come in, but they're not doing it. Well, of course, Egypt is ruled by a dictator, Hosni Mubarak, and he gets a billion or two every year from the U.S. So, you know, a billion or two buys a lot of complicity. And the most guilty party of all is Washington. And it doesn't matter whether it's under a Republican or a Democrat administration. Washington supports Israel with billions of dollars. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me say that, yes, maybe Egypt is not facilitating the movement and the crossings, but we have to realize always that the problem exists in the occupation. The problem exists with the Israeli government. All the successive Israeli governments showed that they are not interested in peace until they have led the Gazans into this siege. I guess all the focus must be on Israel at its occupying power. Israel is the one who violates the Geneva Convention, is killing the people, is making a revolution in Gaza. This is like one of the most reasons that's leading to troubles in Gaza. And I guess all the eyes, all the ears, all the minds must focus on the occupation again and again until we get rid of the siege and ramifications of the war that left thousands of people hungry and other tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands jobless and other hundreds of thousands not able even to get their housing.
Sammy, I agree with you 100%. And, of course, it's gone on since 1967. Rachel, your thoughts?
To add to that, I mean, Sammy is absolutely correct. We have to focus on Israel and its occupation. I mean, it's Israel that determines what items can and cannot go into the border, regardless of whether that's Rafah or the other crossing. I mean, Israel has deemed non-essential items such as lentils, pasta, chickpeas, and juices as items that can't go in. How are those items dangerous? So again, yes, it's Israel that needs to be the focus there.
Oh yeah, I cite Washington, Rachel and Sammy, because Washington is the paymaster, and because they hold the purse strings. If we got responsible leadership, and it decided it would absolutely cut Israel off, it would cut it off. No more aid, no weapons, no money, nothing. And it would not veto resolutions in the UN Security Council. It would introduce them and stop this thing. I think that would change everything if that happened. Comments?
Yes. Regarding the siege in the Gaza Strip at the moment, it's not only like blockading these humanitarian aid and food to get into the Gaza Strip. It's a political sign. Even Hamas movement and all the Palestinian factions agreed in implicitly or explicitly about the two-state solution. Even Hamas is calling on the 1967 borders, which is very advanced step. But at the end, Israel did not agree on the idea. Israel wanted, like, the idea of having a one Jewish country, out of all Palestinians, out of all ethnicity and multi-ethnical countries. They only need a country of Jewish people, and that's, I guess, the only reason for trouble. Gaza siege was imposed. This month Hamas announced it would be ready for a two-state solution on the border of 1967 borders. And even Hamas went in a ceasefire in 2005 and a ceasefire before the war, and Israel violated those two fires. Those two ceasefires. I guess the problem always exists with Israel, and the more problematic idea is the international community is completely in this conspiracy in which they are seeing the people in Gaza starving at the moment, and they are not doing anything. And in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt last month, they have announced that they will be helping the Palestinians by sending millions and millions of dollars. Until this moment, the irony, they have sent nothing for the people. People in Gaza started to pay their houses out of clay due to lack of these materials. People of Gaza are still starving, and people are dying while bringing food from the tunnels with Egypt.
Oh, indeed. That music means we need to take another break. Rachel, please chime in as soon as we come back in your comments. But these are grievous crimes. These are crimes of war, crimes against humanity. And international law is very clear on this.
Yes,
if we only supported it, we could stop this stuff and prosecute the criminals who commit the crimes. We need to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Rachel Rudolph and Sammy Habib. Rachel, your comments on what Sammy was just talking about.
I want to follow up on some things that Sammy said. First, you know, we as the international community, we as concerned citizens of our respective countries cannot demand recognition of an Israeli state until there's recognition of a Palestinian state. Moreover, we cannot continue to withhold money to the Palestinians or to pass it along to corrupt politicians who are more interested in their own political power and less interested in reconciliation. We have a duty, a moral duty, to take action as concerned citizens.
Well, without any question about that, and of course you're talking about the politicians that Israel and Washington can co-opt. And in the many articles that I've written, I have condemned Mahmoud Abbas, the president, supposed president. His term ran out early in January, but he didn't step down. And my goodness, imagine here in this country if George Bush didn't step down and just decided that there would not be anybody else taking his place. Well, I think that would create quite an uproar. But apparently it just kind of passes below the radar. Nobody even pays any attention to it there. And in the West, and the U.S., and Israel support this idea. In other words, an unelected person staying in office, he has no right to be there. There ought to be an election. Oh, my goodness. It certainly is a topic that gives me a great deal of heartburn and stomach acid all the time.
And let me touch up on the idea of the international community. I guess there is no international community. There is the international Israeli community, because this international community is totally in the Israeli boat. Everything is being done by Israel. It's being legalized by the international community. Everything is being accepted by the Israel is accepted by the international community. Even Obama, before he came to the office, he announced clearly in the IPAC that he is supporting Israel, that he would care much about the Israeli security procedures, that he would be guaranteeing the Israeli security. And he's doing this despite the new Israeli government, the new Israeli-elected government by the Israeli people is not interested in peace. Despite this, he's still supporting. I guess if we have Hamas in Palestine, and if Hamas is widely boycotted, saying Hamas is a terrorist organization, I guess we have a more terrorist Israeli government. It's Lieberman who's calling an eradication of Arab. He's not calling only an eradication of Palestinians. He doesn't believe in the existence of Arab. Maybe Hamas is aiming at kicking out the Israeli people, not the Jewish, because the Jewish, they have lived for a while in Palestine, and before the establishment of Israel, there was a person of Jewish people living side by side by the Muslim and the Christians. But this Lieberman and his government is totally ignoring all peace processes, all compromises, all peace accords, and it's being supported. He's being in interviews and meeting with highly official in America and in the European countries, despite he should be recorded at this time. And I guess the most important point is here is we have to be aware of the Israeli mood of the mainstream. The mainstream in Israel is totally at the moment tritist, totally is not caring about peace, because they have brought a very extremist leadership that maybe will lead the entire Middle East in bigger troubles, not even with the Palestinians, but with the Iranians or other countries maybe around.
Indeed, Rachel.
I completely agree. I think we also need to make, we should attempt to, in the future to make a distinction that us as individuals should make a distinction, because Sammy is correct. It is, when we talk of the international community, most individuals think of state, think of government. Well, we need to change that, because there are a lot of people, there are a lot of humans that exist that don't agree. And so we need to take back what is the international community. We need to implement policies that are just and right.
Oh, yes,
one point. Maybe just let me interrupt you. In this point, maybe the international community for us means not only the government. It means the organizations that we have. That we would love to have organizations, but for Syria, most of these organizations now from the international community is going side by side with this government, and this is very, very dangerous. The point here is we have to have a revolution from the people, the population, the popular level. Those people must go in the streets. Those people must support what the Palestinians need and support the rights of Palestinians. But relying on the organizations like the World Bank, the Quartet Committee, associations, and the European Union bodies will not help enough. It's part of the politicians.
That's absolutely correct. And there are a lot of things that people, that individuals can do. They can take back what the governments have hijacked, what the international organizations have hijacked.
I agree. I agree with that point. We have to reactivate the level of popular pressure on those governments and those organizations, like the idea of boycotting, which is widely achieved at the moment under the pretext of, or under the slogan of boycotting the apartheid.
The global BDS movement is so important, boycott sanctions, divestment and sanctions. This is what ordinary people can do. We could decide that we will not ally with anything that comes out of a state that I refer to as either a rogue state or a gangster state, a country that literally is at war with all of Islam and with all Palestinians. And we're talking about mostly civilian men, women, and children, infants. It doesn't matter. People are miserated, shot, displaced, made homeless, on and on and on and on. These are serious crimes, and people need to get angry about it. We're talking about human beings.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. We're talking about occupied Palestine and Gaza under siege. I'm on with Rachel Rudolph and Sammy Habib. Sammy and Rachel, it bothers me no end that I can remember back to when I was a young boy growing up, and I'd go to the movies on a Saturday afternoon. There was no television in those days. This was the 1940s. And you could see movies that really vilified to Arab people. The good guys were the non-Arabs and the thieves and the ones that had a dark side with the Arab people, Muslim people. It didn't say that, but the message was pretty clear. And I forget the author, but there was an author some years back who wrote a book about what Hollywood did going back all those years. And he called it Real Bad Arabs, R-E-E-L, for a movie reel, real bad Arabs. So we've waged war. It's been the West demonizing people that it looks down on as inferior to Western standards, Western morality. My goodness, the roots of Islam and Judaism and Christianity are the same. And the morality of all three is just about the same. And for one to vilify another is really outrageous. But it's amazing when people are taught lies and important truths are withheld, then most people don't take the trouble to find out what the real truths are. And, of course, after the 9/11 event, to bring it up to date, we got the war on terror. Well, it was a war against Islam. That's what it is. I mean, let's call it what it is. It's a war against Islam. And one thing, and then both of you jump in. Yesterday I added a special program for tomorrow to bring on the wife of an innocent person who, along with four others, was sentenced to life in prison. Life in prison, and four of the five, plus 33 years. They committed no crime whatsoever. They're completely innocent. Muslim men, the day before yesterday, the sentence came down for three of them, yesterday for the other two. Talk about an outrage. It's like sentencing a saint to be burnt at the stake because the person is a saint. Well, I don't know how saintly these people are or were, but they certainly were not criminals. They're called the Four Dicks Five. Anyway, we'll have that on the program tomorrow. But back to Gaza. Again, innocent people, so terribly persecuted. Rachel?
To touch up on what you mentioned about Islam, and Islam is a religion of peace. And what's going on right now in the United States in terms of the persecution against Muslims and American Muslims in particular is outrageous. I mean, the Council on American Islamic Relations has documented numerous of incidents of discrimination by not just our authorities, but also by regular individuals. And what it comes down to is, and so the reason that there's support among the masses for these government policies is ignorance. People take what the media states, what mainstream media states, rather than going and picking up the literature and learning what Islam is about.
Well, without any question, I have a couple of Islamic friends in Chicago. If anybody met these people and they had no idea who they were, what their faith or ethnicity was, well, gee, amazing. I mean, they're very natural and normal people. They happen to be very nice people, very honorable people, the kind of people that anybody would be very happy to have as a friend, a good friend. To demonize innocent people really, again, is another terrible crime. It's done for purpose. To get away with the crimes that the U.S. commits and that Israel commits, they need enemies. They need to cite people as bad guys, the dangerous ones. So we call them terrorists. Israel and the U.S. calls Hamas terrorists. Well, they're not terrorists. They're a democratically elected government. They don't launch offensive attacks against Israel or anybody else. But as international law allows, everybody has the right of self-defense. And my goodness, I've quoted international law so many times recently in an article I just wrote about Israel using Palestinians as human shields.
Well, it's very ironical. It's very paradoxical, sir. Since the Bush and his reason of all troubles till this moment, since the Bush came to the office and he clearly stated that this war is against Islam, this war is against Muslims, and against the September action, this wasn't made by Islamic people. It's totally by recruited people who are working to this government, so they would bring the justification to bring the Americans into the Muslim countries, and they have successfully managed to get their plans done.
directly, as you know, after the 11th, the September actions, the Americans went to Afghanistan, and then they went to Iraq, and then they have also succeeded in bringing like a tent for them in Lebanon. So it's very complicated, and it's not a war about like fighting this or that. It's a war about an imperial legend, and I believe that the new Evangelical Church is the one who's behind these troubles. I guess there are many people playing behind the stages, behind the politicians. They are drawing the track of politicians and what would be done maybe in years and years and years. And I have read something regarding that. The new American conservatives, they have really planned for what happened in Afghanistan and Iraq early in the 60s. So it's really replanned thing. And I guess the only troubles for this is the religious thought that governing this American government. And even I'm not very optimistic regarding Obama. I guess he's as the same as Bush when it comes to Palestine and most of the policies. Even in his first 100 days, he didn't show that he was doing enough. He played on some issues, saying this and that, but something factual didn't happen yet.
Well, I'll have a guest on next week who wrote a very strong article about Barack Obama, James Petras. He's a regular on the program. He'll come back next week. He called Barack Obama the first Jewish president, meaning that he absolutely 100% supports the interests of Israel, and he said it, and Jim Petras and I have quoted him verbatim in saying it. There's absolutely no question. He simply, in plain simple English, he does not give a damn about the Palestinians and their rights under the law or any of their humanitarian needs. He simply does not give a damn. He's a very eloquent guy. He knows better. He's a very smart guy. He was a top student at Harvard Law School. He's no George Bush between his ears. And yet he supports these kind of policies. Rachel?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go on, Rachel.
Oh, no. I was just going to touch up on and make the connection. You know, the discriminatory policies against Hamas and the Palestinians are done out of fear, a fear from Western governments and the a lot of the Republican right. You know, Western governments would prefer to support corrupt politicians rather than political parties that seek to make change, to seek to implement reform, to seek to establish a Palestinian state.
Oh, absolutely. I can certainly speak for Washington, Rachel. We much prefer dealing with dictators who run their countries and they don't have to answer to anybody. It's a lot easier dealing with one person than it is having to go through a messy democratic process where my goodness, they have a parliament that actually votes and they may vote against you. Now, it doesn't work that way in Iraq or Afghanistan, where you can have your own parliament, puppet politicians supporting you, and if you make a mistake, you allow a few opposition people in, of course, just to make it look good, but you install a puppet president in Afghanistan and a puppet prime minister in Iraq, and anybody in any position of authority is absolutely somebody who you appointed. We may go through the theatrics of an election, but it's only theatrics. The appointments are done out of Washington, and they basically do the bidding of Washington. And when Israel gets its way, it's the same thing with the Palestinian government. It was that way, very sadly, what came out of the Oslo Agreement in 1993. Very sadly, Yasser Arafat agreed to more or less go along. It was a one-way deal. Israel got everything it wanted. The Palestinians got nothing. And, of course, we had an intifada preceding it. We had another one following it beginning in 2000. And it most likely there will be a third intifada because people only put up with this for so long and then they rebel. And they have every right to rebel. Rachel? Sammy?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I thought Sammy was going to pick that up.
I just looked at you.
You know, as a, people do, but it, you know what, it shouldn't just be the Palestinians. It should be everyone. It should be all the concerned individuals and citizens that exist all over that should stand up and renounce the corruption and support those who want reform, those who want change, those who are concerned with humanity.
Rachel, I think what's central is we want justice. We want what's right. We want to extinguish what's wrong, and we want to institute what's right. And it should be no different whether we're talking about Jews in Israel or Palestinians in Palestine. And Palestinians are willing to settle for a very short end of the deal compromise. Israel stole, before 1967, 78% of their country. 78% of their country over a period of months. And Palestinians resisted more forcefully at the beginning. They had every right to resist. Well, as best they could. They were no match for a powerful Israeli army. And in more recent years, Yasser Arafat included, was willing to compromise. We will settle for the remaining 22%, and you can keep the 78% that you stole from us. But that's not good enough, because Israel wants it all, save for maybe some land of least value, cantonized, surrounded by Israeli forces.
Yes.
And basically, the Palestinians in the West Bank, plus Gaza. And if Israel wants Gaza back, it'll take Gaza back.
Yes. And even Gaza is not being liberated, as all of us think. All of us, like, reckon that Israel pulled out of Gaza and everything is done. In fact, it's not like that. They have withdrawn out around 8,000 settlers who were controlling more than half of the Gaza Strip. Imagine it. Imagine that more than 8,000 controlling most of that strip and 1.5 million in the other half. That was really happening in Gaza. In regard of the solution and what would be happening in the cause, I'm really, again, very pessimistic, and I don't think that there would be a horizon in it for the Palestinians, because the problem exists with the Israeli government. The Israeli government will not accept a one-state solution or a two-state solution or a 100-state solution or a 1,100-state solution, because if we are going to have one country with the Jewish and others, Israelis will not simply accept, because they believe in their own Jewish country that would be purified out of Palestinians and even others. And if they will accept, suppose that they will accept and they will bring Palestinian refugees, and I'm sure they will not accept, because if they will bring the Palestinian refugees, the demographic balance will be automatically going for them, and they will not accept that. A two-state solution will not be applicable as well, because Israelis cannot accept any country beside them, and they cannot accept a Palestinian country with an army, a Palestinian country with borders and airports and seaports, a Palestinian country with a strong economy and a free space, free airspace and a free ground space for them. Israelis will never accept that. What Israelis do want to give us is a small, tiny coastal land in the Gaza Strip, linked with the West Bank by a big tunnel, as Barak was suggesting some a few months before the war. This is what the Israelis want to do us. I reckon that the Israelis will never give us a land, or they will give us a country. And Obama said in his speech in the IPAC that we will give Palestinian a viable state. And he didn't say what kind of viable state he's going to give us. A viable state means less than 20% of Palestine, means Palestinians will not have an army, Palestinians will not have borders, Palestinians will have an economic peace with the Israelis. This is what was the guy suggesting.
Rachel?
A viable Palestinian state requires Palestinians to have control of not only their own land, but the sea and the airspace, so that they can give power to their own economy, to establish their own.
Yeah, I don't think that the viable state means they would be having this, because already they have said that we have left Gaza, but the irony, they have stayed in Gaza and they haven't give us all our freedom, all our needs and necessities.
It's been completely blockaded since the 2006 election in Gaza, which is discriminatory and unfair.
Absolutely. Hamas won a democratic election and became the democratic government of Palestine, and Israel refused to recognize it. And they basically declared war on Hamas after that. And of course, Hamas has been labeled a terrorist organization. Again, completely outrageous. A legitimate government called a terrorist organization, which it absolutely is not in any form. It never was. It isn't now. And back in the 1980s, it's down the memory hole that when Hamas first came into existence, Israel supported Hamas against the PLO, because the PLO was the bad guy. Then after Oslo, PLO became the good guy. And when Hamas won the election in 2006, Hamas became the bad guy again, to be vilified and demonized. And then the real hard lockdown siege for a couple of years. I guess the siege really goes back to that 2006 election. It wasn't really a siege then, but
but that's when economic sanctions were imposed.
Oh yeah, sanctions and boycott and the rest of it. The borders were open, but the restrictions were very, very heavy. And then over the past 2 years, an absolute hard lockdown siege with very brief intermittent border openings, as Israel saw fit to allow some food in, some fuel, whatever. Plus all of the attacks that Israel commits continually against Gaza and against the West Bank, too, with incursions as Israel chooses to do.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hour, final few minutes with Rachel Rudolph and Sami Habib. I want to let you both finish up, but Rachel, let me just ask you, please keep me posted as you learn of new developments that I may not have heard of, and you have an open door welcome, Sami, you as well, to come back on this program anytime to discuss important things as developments happen ahead. This is a story I will never let go of. This is a core topic on this program, but let me let both of you finish up with some final thoughts.
Go on, Rachel.
I guess I would say I would like to plead with my fellow Americans to say, you know, we can't stand idle while our governments bicker and play politics. Lives are at stake. There are bellies to feed. There are smiles that need to be placed on the little ones' faces in Gaza. We cannot continue as it is. We must rekindle our humanity. We must move beyond the limited confines of our self-interested individualized existence.
Sammy?
Yes.
Go ahead.
We are not very happy with the performance of the government, the officials. We're not happy with the performance of the organizations. We're happy of the performance of the people, and it was very clear in time of the Gaza war when millions and millions of people went out to streets. But what we need at the moment, and in my final word, is requesting the people to move on. Everyone can help, despite its little help. Everyone, even by the word, everyone, even by the voice, can help. Just go into the administration. Go speak about Palestine. You try to write an article. Try to forward by your email an article. Every single effort you make to help Palestinians would be, for sure, a very helpful, helping hand, and it would have a very effective effect, even if it's not now, but later on.
And to add to that, there are so many things that people can do. I mean, individuals, if they were keen on it, they could go to Egypt. They could camp out at the border. They could have letter-writing campaigns. They could have telephone campaigns. They could organize. They could get people involved. And more importantly, they could educate others about the humanitarian plight of the Palestinians.
Oh,
yes,
absolutely.
We can educate others. And let me just tell the listeners and the audience of this program that they can get into our newspaper. It's a Palestinian new one to change the dimension of the controlled media. It's www.paltelegraph.com, paltelegraph.com. It's called the Palestine Telegraph Newspaper. pastelegraph.com. Everyone can get in and see the coverage we're making. It's away from the others' coverage because we're trying to make balance in the controlled media.
Let me mention one other site, too. My friend Ramzi Baroud, been on this program several times. His website, PalestineChronicle.com. It's just a wonderful resource for what's going on. And follow that site, and you'll know. Rachel, as you said, key is that we ourselves need to get educated and understand what's going on. And then, crucially important, spread the word to others. Truth is a wonderful cleanser. When people know the truth, the people who commit the crimes don't have an easy time getting away with it. They get away with them because people don't realize exactly what they're doing. So we need to know, and listeners to this program know, and they'll continue to know. And this is the way we stop these atrocities from going on. We are just about out of time. I hear the band in the background. I just want to thank you both for coming on, Rachel Rudolph, Sammy Habib. This is a crucial topic. It will continue to be discussed on this program all the time. And I've said it myself, a peace in the Middle East is impossible unless we resolve this situation equitably. We're a long way from doing it. And peace in the Middle East is a long ways away, but it will happen one day. Rachel, Sammy, thank you both for coming on.
Thank you.
We'll have another live program on Monday, and we'll have a pretty full schedule next week as well. Thank you both. Join us tomorrow.